97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, it's a good sign when the music drags on that the host is not quite ready to start the show as we kind of get ready and settled in here on a Tuesday afternoon. I feel like I have to start with this, though, because a lot of people are going to see AC/DC tonight at the Dome and Foo Fighters. Even George Rosenthal is heading over there. He's going to do a little Tech Talk Tuesday with us before that. Fred, you going to the show tonight at the Dome, are you?
You know, I'm going to miss that one.
Would you go to the show if someone offered you free tickets? Would you go see AC/DC and Foo Fighters or not?
Yes, I would.
You would? Okay. I've never seen AC/DC, and I really did want to see them on this tour, and I thought about going out to Vegas when they were there. And I didn't do that, but you know, there are two things that kept me away from this show, Fred. One was the Dome, and the second thing is the Dome, for a variety of reasons. Okay, one, I don't like really even outdoor shows, like stadium shows, not my favorite thing. Bush Stadium, same thing, because no matter how good your seats might be, you're still way back, right? And I just don't like the Dome at all. But that's going to be an interesting show tonight. I know if Sue were here, she'd be focusing on the traffic aspect of that, because typically when there are things at the Dome, traffic does not move very smoothly. So we'll certainly keep you posted on that. But she's off until Thursday afternoon. What a crazy weekend. How was your weekend, Fred?
Oh, it was great. It was a lot of fun watching a lot of sports.
Yep, I watched a lot of sports too. We have sports controversies, right, Ethan?
That we do. What a crazy weekend. The Cardinals had a pretty solid weekend against the Rockies. There was even some flair for the dramatic with Doug Eddings,
the
umpire.
Should we go back to Friday? Because, look, this whole weekend was crazy from a variety of perspectives. And we can start kind of with what happened with the hat controversy. I don't know if someone's given that a name. And then you have the Michigan game. And, oh, my God, we're going to talk about that because that's just nuts. And then last night, I don't know if you noticed this last night, Fred, or if you were watching baseball, but the game, the Florida State SMU game was delayed 2 hours because they had a power outage. So we actually went from a game that is going to end up being one of the most controversial football games in all of history, the Michigan-Western Michigan game, to a game where they didn't really use the clock that people could see, to a game last night where they couldn't use the clock because they couldn't use the clock. It was so bizarre. Some things worked, some things didn't.
Yeah, they had to go old school.
Right. At halftime, I think things got a little bit better. They didn't have the coach-to-player communication, but that was crazy. But let's talk briefly about the hat controversy. Can you explain what happened with that? Because it feels like it was like 2 weeks ago, because it was Friday, Ethan.
So on Friday, Hansel Rincon was making his major league debut for the St. Louis Cardinals, relief pitcher. He wears his hat tilted off to one of the sides,
right,
slightly, not drastically,
still
but
little,
slightly, right? Just a little bit.
Right.
Doug Eddings, the home plate umpire on Friday night, did not like the look of it. He took offense to it for some reason, maybe because he thought it was unprofessional. I don't know. He, before Rincon starts pitching, tells him to fix his hat.
Right.
Ollie Marmol, the Cardinals manager,
did not
like that.
Right. I mean,
after the inning, Marmol is chirping at him, and they get into an argument. And as a result, once they're ready to resume play, Eddings counts it as a mound visit? Pitch clock violation.
Yeah,
he counts it as a pitch clock violation. And Marmol then loses his mind, yelling at him to grow the F up. The John Boy breakdown was pretty darn good. Marmol was not happy. He gets tossed. Shortly after that, Mark, the Rockies play at the plate. Cardinals are in the field. Play at the plate. And an out clear as day was called safe by Doug Eddings. He had a point-blank view. There's no way that he did not see that the runner was out at the plate. But the Cardinals, he knew, did not have another chance to review. They had already used their replay and their challenge at that point.
So do we think that he did that on purpose?
I think he did.
Oh, my gosh.
I personally think he did.
I think he just blew it.
There is just, I mean, with that clear of a view, there is just no way with everything that had led up prior to it that there wasn't something
there. Okay, I hope
that
that's not the case. But then, I guess, to show solidarity, was the whole team during batting practice wearing their caps a little tilted?
And some of the Rockies.
Saturday? And some of the Rockies, too, yeah.
Yep.
So he, you know, I guess he apologized, right? The umpire apologized.
We think he did.
Right. We're not
exactly
sure.
Rincon doesn't speak English, so we know that, you know, he says that he thinks he was trying to apologize.
But Eddings also says that it was a player that brought it up, right? But then that wasn't really confirmed. The whole thing was goofy.
He said that the Rockies catcher, Hunter Goodman, is the one that brought something up to Eddings about it. Hunter Goodman denied that.
Right, exactly.
He said that wasn't true.
Then there's Michigan. All right, so let's... Were you watching this, Fred, when this
happened?
No,
but I've seen a lot of
it. Okay, so what's funny is, this is kind of hilarious, because there's, 9 seconds left on the clock, and I'm watching the end of this game, but I'm like, I'm about to fall asleep, right? So I got like one eye open, but I want to see the end of the game, right? So 9 seconds left on the clock. Bryce Underwood, the quarterback for Michigan, heaves a Hail Mary, no catch, right? Time expired, game over, one of the biggest upsets certainly in the modern era of college football. But then the officials come back and say, just kidding, game not over. The clock that you saw, that the whole world saw, was not the clock that they saw in the review room, right? So it wasn't really even the officials on the field that overruled this. It was the booth that overruled it. They said, okay, we got 1 second left on the clock. New Hail Mary, touchdown, Michigan wins, big controversy. There's even stuff today with some legal filings with Western Michigan, because they're pissed, right, Ethan? I mean, this whole thing, how do you even explain this? Because there's no doubt that, at least in my mind, that Michigan was given the benefit, way the benefit of the doubt, where there shouldn't have been time remaining. The game was over.
This is 100% rigged. This is 100% BS. And Josh Pate, one of my favorite college football contributors, said if this was the other way around, if Western Michigan was heaving it deep, they would not have put an extra second on the clock.
Never,
0% chance that would have happened. The statement that the Big Ten made following this, and for those that aren't aware, what happened is they gave an extra second. They said that in their clock that they had in their instant replay room, there was fractions of a second remaining, and it hadn't reached triple zeros yet, and that was the reason for the extra play. So this was the statement from the Big Ten Conference following. Following video review, was determined Western Michigan's number 18 started his jump from an established out-of-bounds position and made contact with the ball with 1 second remaining on the clock. As shown in the provided video of what was viewed during the replay process, a side-by-side view of the play and the game clock using a direct shot of the game clock in the stadium was used to determine the final ruling. Get this. It says 85 minutes prior to the game, all broadcast cameras used for their replay system, including the camera on the game clock, are synced using a strobe system to ensure all cameras are aligned.
Apparently not.
But they weren't synced. It makes no sense.
All right, so then today, the commissioner of the MAC says, after further study and investigation, it's now evident that replay protocol was not properly followed in determining whether time remained on the game clock at the conclusion of the Western Michigan-Michigan football game. The established replay protocol requires that the game clock displayed on the program feed be used in determining whether time remained. Instead, the Big Ten replay crew relied upon the clock embedded within its replay system. Now, here's Mike Pereira. He's great. He's one of the rules officials, former referee. He's on with a podcaster here, I
Joel
think,
Klatt,
talking about this. Yeah.
This is the key, and here's where it got lost, in my opinion. Not my opinion. This is what it is. The official replay officials have been told that if there is a discrepancy, use the television footage. Do not use your footage in the command center. Use the footage that 10 million people are watching, not the one that's three. Because if the basic premise of replay, Joel, back in 99, we said, look it, don't overturn anything that people that are watching TV don't see. Don't use video that they can't see. because conspiracy theories are going to be abound everywhere.
Hit the bell, Fred. Hit the bell, because if Sue were here, that's exactly what's happening right now.
Yep.
Is conspiracy theories are abounding everywhere.
And so the replay officials have been told, and I get it, this panic situation, you've never had it before. Take a deep breath. Look at both. If there is a discrepancy, go to the TV and use the television shot. So really, really, when it's all said and done, that's what should have happened, and there shouldn't have been another play.
And clearly, because of what the Big Ten released, they did not do that. They did not look at the television copy of what was being shown to all of us.
Right, and they did. I mean, they did point out everything factually, which is true. And what they were looking at, somehow, some way, sinking is the question that has to be addressed, but some way there was still a tick on the clock when that ball was touched.
Yeah, so the sinking is something that is going to have to be addressed. But so, Fred, so let me go back to one eye open, right? One eye open, I'm trying to watch the end of the game. I see the play, game over, right? And I'm kind of, you know, a little tired and wrapping things up, and I go upstairs, and Becky's like, did you see the end of the Michigan game? And I'm like, yeah, crazy. And she goes, no, Michigan won. I'm like, what? I'm like, I couldn't believe it. So then I got to go downstairs again, and I start watching this because I'm like, what? You got to be kidding me that happened. And I'm still stunned that it happened, but I think Mike Pereira has the proper take on it. But Ethan, when all is said and done, now you raise an interesting point. Western Michigan's a pretty good team, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they may win this conference.
They won the MAC last year, and this is early. We have played 1 week. And it is a long college football season, longer than it ever has been. But there is a world where, because the group of six conferences get a representee from one of those conferences
in the
college football playoff, there is a world in which Western Michigan could be a college football playoff team. Could there be a world in which their season, their postseason, is impacted because of this game?
Crazy.
What a disaster that
crazy
would be.
Crazy stuff in the world of sports. So we'll get to that. We'll cover it from a variety of perspectives this afternoon. We got Cusimano coming up a little bit later. It's Tech Talk Tuesday. George Rosenthal will be here. I sent him, I'll tell you what, he's got topics he always sends, you know, Fred, but I sent George a piece last week that was really, really frightening about the Hugging Face incident. And we're going to talk about that, where AI went rogue a few weeks ago, because there's some people out there trying to downplay that. George and I are not among them. We're trying to say, wait, this is worse than maybe people think, but that's coming up in a couple hours from now. I can't believe this goes back probably at this point more than a decade, but Sam Dotson was the police chief of the city of St. Louis. He left town for a while, is back as the dean of the George Herbert Walker School of Business and Technology at Webster University. He's going to join us at 3:30, kind of an update on what he's doing. And then, you know, we had another one of these teen takeovers, Fred, as you know, in the Bevo area.
It was a bad one.
But it was really bad. And, you know, by the time the cops get there, they're outmanned and there's a car that's on fire. You know, and obviously St. Louis not alone in these things that are happening across the country, but my goodness, another one. And look, these kids know this happened at 1 a.m. down in Bevo, and the kids know that the cops are outmanned, and, you know, they go for it. And that's what happened again, unfortunately, this weekend. Cassie Smedley is with us, former RNC's press secretary, back on 97.1 FM Talk, and we have her on the Zoom this afternoon. We're trying this new video thing. Cassie, how are you? It's this new thing where you can see people and they talk and you can hear them at the same time. Thanks for coming on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you doing?
Hello, this newfangled technology.
Right.
What a time.
You look spectacular. I have to kind of cheat a little bit. I have to look to my right to see you, and then I have to fake people out and act like I'm looking at you in the camera, just like when I was a TV anchor. So nothing like hearkening back to those days from many decades ago. Hey, by the way, we kind of get punished, you and I, as NFL fans, because the Chiefs don't play till next Monday night.
I know. And actually, we get punished, right, because we don't get to participate in the big first weekend stuff. But the Monday night game, it's against the Broncos, which
it's
in Kansas
great.
City, you know,
oh, yeah.
It should be great. They were so good last year. My oldest brother lives in Colorado now, and I'm like, you better not show up in a Broncos jersey. But the Broncos are actually good now.
Yeah, they
and
are.
So now I'm really nervous, because that used to always be a nice start to the season. You'd get a good Broncos win, you know, under your belt.
Absolutely. The Raiders and the Broncos rivalry, just outstanding. I remember that was when I first started going to Chiefs games, late 80s, early 90s. Those were the games that I was looking forward to most. All right, so let's talk some politics here. Here's Harry Enten on CNN talking about some poll numbers for the president.
Net approval rating on inflation. Trump is averaging 50 points underwater. That is 12 points worse than Joe Biden was averaging back in August of 2022. And the issue that got Donald Trump reelected to the White House, and is still the number one issue in the minds of the American electorate, and he stuck 50 points underwater in a place that no other president has ever been before.
You know, Cassie, what caught my attention this morning as I was driving into work wasn't the $4 gas prices that everyone's paying for unleaded, because we've had those for a few days, but I looked at the price of diesel, and it's sitting at $6 right now in Missouri. And as you know, that's going to affect everything, the price of diesel. So I do think that there is an inflation, you know, I don't know if he's making the same mistake that Joe Biden made, but with gas prices in and of themselves, with the situation in Iran, by the way, we have more activity this afternoon. There's some bombing that is happening near Karg Island. But is the president at his great peril kind of ignoring the inflation issue right now or not?
I don't think ignoring, because that's one of the things that Harry Enten's polling does not take into consideration, is that the frustration is that Joe Biden had all of these big far left liberal policies, his greenie policies designed as an infrastructure bill or disguised as an infrastructure bill. And then when people were saying, hello, we're being bothered out here, this is not good, he said, who are you going to believe, me or your lion eyes? You know, the Bill Clinton adage. President Trump, J.D. Vance just recently acknowledged this in his comments last week, they've acknowledged that this is a temporary issue because they are getting at issues that no one before them has been willing to tackle, like peace in the Middle East, making sure Iran has not have a nuclear weapon. But even with the tariffs, which I'm not going to be a sycophant for the president here. I'm not sure how I feel about tariffs, but I do completely believe and agree that for generations, my entire lifetime for sure, we have watched other countries take advantage of our generosity. We've watched jobs and industries get offshored and hollowing out opportunities for my generation. And he's the only president in my lifetime, and arguably both of our lifetimes, I think we're about the same age, that has been willing to do the hard things to reshore the American supply chain. That's a long-term benefit. And yeah, it's a big argument to make to the American people to say, it's going to be worth it. Hang on. This isn't just for some big government program. This is actually about making America great again. But they've got to be headstrong about that. And looking at this convention the next couple of days, I think that's going to be central to the messaging of what you're getting here is the opportunity for America to be greater again, to be great again. And they're making that directly to the American people in prime time.
So, Cassie, you mentioned there is the event in Dallas. This is kind of like a midterm convention in the heart of a state that's going to be at the forefront of the, you know, the Senate battle here with the Tallarico and the Ken Paxton race. Now, we keep seeing, you know, and I keep hearing the same narrative that we heard with Beto O'Rourke. There's other people that are out there that are kind of warning as a cautionary tale. Even, you know, Ted Cruz is saying, look, be careful here, because this is a different time than when I ran against Beto O'Rourke. And, you know, even though some of the polling has been off for these primaries, Tallarico is running against a guy that's very flawed. So what other messaging you think is going to come out of Dallas this week?
Yeah, well, to be clear, one thing that was pointed out to me actually back in the primary with Cornyn versus Paxton, don't forget Ken Paxton has won statewide many times, more than John Cornyn, who is the sitting senator that he beat in the primary. So Texans know how they feel about Ken Paxton, and I would argue similar to how they feel about President Trump. They've taken into consideration the more controversial or unsavory pieces of his background, and they say, but if he's going to do work for me and my family and good work for us, then I can accept that full package. And so I think voters are smart. Voters in Texas know what they've got in Ken Paxton and know what he's been able to deliver as an AG, which he's been very good. And compare that to Tallarico. You don't know who he is. He's, from my account, from everything that I've heard, he's not telling us who he truly is. We don't know who he is. I think he was built by consultants, built by a political machine of what they think Texans might vote for in a Democrat. But he is as far left as they come. I think his weird obsession with transgender children, it's just strange that that's his like default answer. I think Texans are seeing that. We'll see through that. So ultimately, I think Republicans will be fine and Kim Paxton will be the next senator from Texas. But it's a race on their hands. I'm glad to see that MAGA Inc. and the president in his political operation are very physically and literally monetarily coming in big for him now, because we need to make sure we keep Texas.
Yeah, look, in the end, I think he wins. In the end, I think Mike Rogers wins. But, you know, the media is going to have this narrative here, especially because, you know, let's face it, some of the polling is not very complimentary toward President Trump. The frustrating thing to me is I don't want people to forget all the good things. And I think that he's out there trying to remind people of that. But for me, Cassie, this is just me. If you take the war out of the mix here, or let's just say the aftermath of the 4 to 6 weeks, you know, the timetable that was set originally, I'm fine with everything that Trump's done outside of some of the sophomoric stuff that I wish he would, you know, quit doing that he's never going to stop doing. But the war has really kind of stuck in my craw here because we don't seem to have a way to get out of it. I'm all down with getting rid of nuclear weapons and making sure Iran can't have nuclear weapons. We've got a great, great American in Rocky Sickman from St. Louis, who was one of the original Iranian hostages. So we know this story very well in St. Louis, but I just don't think they have a good plan for an exit ramp here that's going to, you know, make the world or the American people happy. Now, again, we have new bombing today near Kargil, so maybe we get a different narrative in the couple of days that follow, but I think he's in big trouble here politically with this war.
I think you're right insofar as it's something that many Americans don't understand the benefit, because we are in the business of wanting instant gratification. And I had instant gratification with President Trump policies that got my gas down to $2.50 a gallon and lower in some places. So now I'm seeing that since this war, that has changed. So you tell me, and you're having to explain to me the long-term benefits. So let's just be very honest about that. Now, one thing I think is interesting, you know, I feel like every time we talk, I leave you with a date that's on my mind.
Okay.
And the date that's on my mind, except I'm blanking on the exact day, I think it's October 18th, is Israel's election. And I think, you know, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu's got a big race for himself, for his own political future. But there's a very interesting debate happening over there. I think I told you last time I was on, I was just over in Israel this summer and got to hear from literally all sides of their political spectrum. I think after that election, they're going to be able to go and do what they need and want to do over in the Middle East. I just feel like that's going to be a date where we're going to start to see some absolute things happen. And will that be enough time ahead of our own elections?
Yeah, we'll
but
have
again,
to see.
Having this midterm election or midterm convention this week, as people have gotten kids back in school, we're through summer vacations, people are finally actually starting to focus on November. Good time to have President Trump in prime time and have Republicans out there saying what we're for, and also putting on blast what the Democrats are offering, which is Al-Sayed and Hassan Piker, and expect to hear a lot about the DSA movement.
Absolutely. Speaking of dates, I have to ask people this week, where were you on 9/11?
I was at St. Teresa's Academy in Kansas City, junior year American history class with Mr. Edgar, and I will never forget. It was on a radio. We were in the basement. We didn't have service for a TV. And he wrote on the chalkboard that morning in that hour, remember this name, Osama bin Laden.
Wow. Yeah,
he pronounced it in that moment. Never forgot it. And I obviously lived through American history. And Peggy Noonan has a great column out recently about how it's not only never forget, it's our time to
I saw it last
story.
Week. Yeah, she was great. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Cassie, thanks so much for jumping on here with me this afternoon. By the way, God bless you for saying maybe that we were of similar age, but I'm old enough to be your father based on what you just told me where you were on 9/11. We'll just leave it at that. Thanks, Cassie. We'll see you. Take care. Well, it's Tuesday, but we'll still have Frank Cusimano with us in the 4 o'clock hour. This is going to be a big week when the Cardinals get back home for their last homestand, which is kind of hard to believe. We have World Series commemorations this weekend, both Friday and on Saturday. 2006 on Friday, 2011 on Saturday, and that's going to be a lot of fun. A little bit later this afternoon, you know, we ended the week with the Lindsey Clancy non-verdict, the mistrial. Paul Morrow was all on top of that. He's going to join us after 5 o'clock. He also stood guard at Ground Zero, documenting what he witnessed on scraps of paper 25 years ago. His story is really amazing. So Paul's going to join us after 5 o'clock. We have Tech Talk Tuesday with George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet as well. So we were doing the roundtable last week, and Chief Tim Fitch was in here, former St. Louis County Police Chief and good friend of the show and roundtable veteran. And he mentioned that Sam Dotson was back in town. And Sam and I used to know each other when he was police chief here of St. Louis. And I had no idea, because apparently I'm not paying close enough attention, Sam Dotson, that you are now the dean of the business school at Webster University. How are you? It's been a little bit. How are you doing?
Mark, It's great to talk to you. Yeah, I came back to St. Louis at the end of April from Washington, D.C. I spent about 8 years in Washington, D.C. working for a little train company you might have heard called Amtrak as their chief of police. And I came back to join the Webster team.
Well, welcome back to St. Louis. One of the things I think you did, didn't you work for the Washington Nationals for a little while, too, when you were out there?
I did a season with the Washington Nationals the year they hosted the All-Star Game, the year before they won the World Series. So I spent a year with the MLB team in D.C. I did.
What was your last year here as chief in St. Louis?
2017. I left in April of 2017. I retired.
So we're almost at 10 years now. And, you know, Sam, a lot has happened in that time with policing and with the city and with the city leadership. And I guess one question I would have is just, you know, what your thoughts are on policing right now. I had Chief Tracy and Chris Saraceno in the studio a couple weeks ago. I also had the mayor in talking about some of these things. I'm very concerned about, you know, even safety right around downtown here. But we're not on the same page. We're always fighting. And then the story becomes the same thing we saw this weekend at Bevo with these, you know, teen takeovers and everything. We don't seem to be moving forward. I know that the crime numbers kind of tell us that crime is down, but thoughts on where the city is right now?
Yeah, Mark, it's a great question. And it's a challenge that St. Louis and cities all over the country struggle with. The crime numbers are ticking down. Crime is coming down. But if you don't feel safe, if you don't feel safe in your neighborhood, you don't feel safe in your home, then the numbers don't matter. And the men and women of the police department and the city and the county are just doing a great job all the time, but they're under-resourced, understaffed, and you know this. And then what we also is, we need outcomes. I think the story you saw this weekend in Bevo, everybody says when the police showed up, the crowd scattered, you know, within 2 or 3 minutes. So the police do their job. There just aren't enough of them out there doing their job. And I think that's an investment that has to happen. If St. Louis wants to grow, St. Louis wants to be a real player, you got to invest where it matters, and security policing is where it matters.
Well, and you know, because you were chief in the aftermath of everything that happened with Mike Brown, and you know, one of the things that I said, and I still say, is I can't even imagine, you know, being the wife or the husband, the son or daughter, the mom, the dad of police officers, first and foremost, what they have to do every day, just confronting, you know, especially in a city like St. Louis, violence, but not having people's support and having, and man, you know this from back then, some of the people that took the worst of the brunt in the aftermath of that were the African-American officers. They were spat upon. They were, you know, treated like dirt. So how you would even incentivize someone to want to do this type of work becomes a challenge in the aftermath of what happened here in Ferguson. But even moving forward, you know, you've seen a lot of good recruitment. I think Miami's been a good example of this nationwide. Chief Fitch talks about that. But it's really a budget thing in St. Louis, and that's what we can't seem to figure out, Sam.
Well, I think it's a budget thing. I think you have to prioritize and invest where it matters. But I also think you have to show the officers, whether they're on the job now or the ones that you're trying to recruit, that the community is behind them. And I saw this, whether it was in South St. Louis, North St. Louis, and St. Louis County, even on the east side, it doesn't matter. The communities vastly support the police department and the police officers. It's the minority, the small minority, the vocal minority that steals the headlines. I don't think that you could ask anybody, do you want to feel safe in your home? They're going to tell you no. Do you want to feel safe in your neighborhood? They're not going to tell you no. They're going to tell you yes. And that's the story we need to tell. More people want more police officers.
What do you do about, you know, we hear this, and I know your officers probably tell you this all the time. The ones that I still know tell me this. A lot of these guys are arresting the same guys, right? It's over and over. They get released. Rinse, recycle, repeat. That's what happens. And I think this is a little bit better in St. Louis now with Gabe Gore, because from, you know, what I heard from Chief Tracy and others, Gabe Gore is really doing a good job. He's actually prosecuting criminals. Go figure that we can do that. But you have to have that support. And these officers for a while, I think, felt like they didn't have that because they knew they didn't have it.
Well, and I think the officers always want more. And I think that's the right thing. It's their job to put criminals behind. The public should always want more, too. Because when the officers do their job, they're arresting the criminals. I think Gabe is doing a fantastic job. You know, the time that I've been back and tracking him, he's prosecuting the people that need to be prosecuted. But when you get to the court system and you get to the prison system, there have to be outcomes that change behavior. And what we still don't see those outcomes that change behavior. And I will tell you, I was in Washington, D.C. when the Trump administration pushed the visibility of the National Guard. Mm-hmm. It makes a difference. When they had a new prosecutor, it makes a difference. And so all of those things have to be working together. Not any one of them by themselves solves the problem, but when they're all moving together, communities move forward, people feel safer, you are safer.
I'm glad you brought up D.C. because, you know, the president mentions that, and I think he feels like for all the things he's done, he doesn't get enough attention on that. And I've heard from folks in Washington that it's, you know, dramatic improvement from the last couple of years. So that's encouraging to hear. So tell me what the new gig is all about. You're the Sam Dotson is here, former chief of police for the city of St. Louis. You're the dean of the Webster University Business School. Did you ever see yourself becoming an academic like this, or were you in the past? I might not know that.
Yeah, actually, I am a Webster alum, so that's where it started. I did my undergraduate here. I got my bachelor's degree here, and I fell in love with the place. It allowed me to go to school while I was a police officer, so that's the first thing. Second thing is it taught me how to be a real, real person. It's this great liberal arts business school combination, and so I'm a management major. I have an MBA. It taught me how to work. It taught me how to think. It taught me how to be part of a community. So I used a lot of the skills I learned here at Webster in the police department. I was so excited when I had a chance to come back and be part of it. And Webster has 9 campuses, and it's not a commercial, but Webster has 9 campuses all over the world. We're a global university. That's a big deal because it brings all of that institutional knowledge, it brings all that thought into one place. And so really excited about being asked to join the team here.
I mean, you had, when you were at Amtrak, that was a ginormous organization, right?
So when you think about it, Amtrak is only one of the few truly national police departments. I had police officers in 46 states across the country in a local policing kind of method in a model, trying to figure out how to get a train to Hawaii. Haven't figured that one out yet. But
let Gavin Newsom figure that one out. He'll figure it out.
But yeah, we were doing local style police work in countries or in cities all over the country. And that was a great job. And again, you know, the 500 officers there just do a fantastic job every day keeping the railroad safe.
Well, I'm glad you're back in St. Louis, and I'm sorry that I kind of missed the headline from May when you came back, but we should get together and do a little lunch. You should buy me lunch is what I think I'm saying,
right?
Something along those lines,
right? I'll come give you a tour of the campus. I think you'll love it.
I would love to. I used to go over there. This has been a little while as well, but they always would do like a high school senior day job, you know, sort of deal over at Webster, and I would always try to enlighten the youths of America as far as what their next steps in broadcasting. I think basically what I told them is don't go into broadcasting, Sam. That was my advice. It holds today. Sam Dotson, thanks a lot. We'll talk soon. We'll see you. Take care.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, we'll see you. Well, we have more gender nonsense going on. It's always like out in Portland or Washington State or something like that, right? Seattle, Portland. This one's from Portland. And, I, you know, Jen Say has to just be eating up the publicity on this. I wear my XXXY gear all the time. I love it. It's great quality clothing. And she's really gotten a lot of attention because of Sophie Cunningham and some other fans wearing XXXY T-shirts to games. So there were some women that went to the Portland Thorns match. I think this is the I'm going to make sure here because this is not the WNBA game. I think this is the women's soccer team in Portland. Anyway, they are in the game. They're wearing their XXXY shirts. That's all they're doing. They're not doing anything else. This has become a pattern now. They're asked to leave the game because they have T-shirts on that support women's sports that says Save Women's Sports and XXXY. That's all they say. Oop, I was going to play the audio. Here we go. Now, I still don't have the audio. Let's try it one more time.
For security reasons, we all need to go talk up there.
Why? Danger?
Why?
Everybody has to go talk up there.
Why?
Because we're security.
Why?
Asking you to go.
What have we done? We have the rules right here.
Here's the rules of conduct. I'll give two to your guys.
What we have not. We brought.
So there was an allegation that they were somehow handing out some notices or notifications. They deny that. There's a woman named Amy Sousa who gets interviewed. I'll go to her here in just a second. But the security comes and they literally just try to. I think they end up ejecting them for wearing these shirts.
With us, we have done nothing against
the entire group is being ejected.
Hi.
The situation is you've been ejected.
This is ridiculous. This is a violation of our rights and our rights.
We're not violating anybody's rights. Okay. But right now, you're on private property. Out here is public property. You can stand out there all you want to. Right now, you're on private property.
This is insane. They are kicking us out. We have 2 women with disabilities with us, and they are kicking us out. This is insanity.
It is insanity.
We are wearing XXXY shirts. This is insanity.
So what happened was, and Amy, I think, is going to tell part of the story, then they go to this bar, and look, will I admit that they're trying to get a little attention here? Absolutely. And good for them. But they go to this place called the, let's see, I think it's called the Sports Bra, actually. And there are people that complain about them in the after they order. They sit down, they order their food, drinks. The waitress comes over and says, you're going to have to leave because people don't like your shirts. But here's Amy Sousa telling this story.
We're wearing our T-shirts under our outer clothing. So the picture where I am in my red sweatshirt, mm-hmm. that's the picture that I... That's what I was wearing when they ejected us. So we still had our rain coverings on when they ejected us. The only material that we had was copies of their own stadium rules. And we brought those copies just to ensure that we were following their rules to the letter. So we disseminated no materials. We shared the rules amongst our very small group. We only had five copies of their rules. So what they are doing is lying, and we followed everything that they wanted us to do to the letter. And it's ridiculous.
I don't know what the end game here is, but let's think about this for a second. You got one of the co-owners of the Seattle WNBA team that goes up to a couple of girls that are on the court wearing XXXY shirts and made one of them cry, one of the 16-year-old girls. Now you have this situation, and it keeps happening with you know, and it's, by the way, you can wear your XXXY gear to a baseball game. You can wear it to a football game. But God, if you wear it to a women's sports event, that's when you get in trouble, when you're trying to define what women are. You don't get into trouble when you're trying to watch men's sports. It's only women's sports, which is interesting.
I had posted on social media that I was going to go to the game, and I was inviting other women to come with me and to wear shirts that represented our stance of being pro women and girls sports. Mm-hmm. At that time, after I had posted on my social media, I did get some pushback from people in the Portland area telling me that they were going to call the police to alert them that I was going to be at the stadium. Of course, I took this with a very light heart because I thought to myself, you're going to call the police on some middle-aged women who want to go to a soccer game? What are you going to tell the police? Like, there will be women at a soccer game.
Good point.
So I, while I did take it with a light heart, I also wanted to go in a little forewarned and prepared, and to just know exactly what the rules are so that we could mm-hmm. know in our own conscience that we were following everything exactly.
Think about this, though. Think through it here. I don't even really care what side of politics you're on. You're being ejected from a sporting event simply for wearing a T-shirt or something that says Save Women's Sports. So this happened at the bar as well, and it was interesting. The audio is a little fuzzy, so I didn't have Ethan pull it. But one of the things that happened when she goes to this bar called the Sports Bra is that the waitress comes over and says, you got to leave. People are complaining. And Amy Sousa is like, wait a second, you didn't say that when we walked in. Well, I didn't notice it. They noticed it. We don't like it. It's a gay bar, so that's probably why they were there, and it's probably why they wanted them kicked out. I'm, again, acknowledging the fact that there's a little, you know, PR component to this. But what's crazy is what the what the bar actually says in the aftermath of this, because they actually put something on their social media that says, our mission is to support, promote, and empower girls and women in sports. And to be clear, trans girls are girls and trans women are women. That's just simply not the truth. And they're going to run with that as much as they can. So what they said on Facebook is, part of our commitment to belonging means that we protect our marginalized community members. We will delete comments that are hostile, threatening, or use profanity. We will block repeat offenders. At the Sports Bra, our mission is simple: support, promote, and empower all, that's in all caps there, all girls and women in sports. To be clear, trans girls are girls and trans women are women. Since day one, we've built our space to be inclusive, especially for people who don't feel comfortable at a traditional sports bar. That includes the Alphabet Mafia members. That's my word there. As a reminder, the T in the Alphabet Mafia, you know, slang stands for trans. We welcome people of every identity and background, but we do not, really? I don't think so. We do not tolerate messages or conduct that demean or exclude the very community that we exist to serve and celebrate by wearing a T-shirt, by being able to define what a woman is. But that's Portland, that's Seattle, apparently that's Chicago. There's a little of this going on in the East Coast as well. Thank God I don't think it's really here. But we'll see.
Get more at 971talk.com.